Welcome to Matters of Experience, the podcast where we dive into the ideas, innovations, and imagination shaping the world of designed experiences. From museums to multimedia, from architecture to AI, we explore how creativity transforms space into story. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And to our regular listeners, thank you for coming back and being part of the conversation. If you enjoy what you hear, please take a moment to rate the show and share it with a friend. It helps curious minds find us. Now, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Abigail Honor.
Hello, this is Brenda Cowan.
Today's episode is one I've really been looking forward to. We're joined by Stephen Rosen, founder of the lighting design firm Available Light, a name you may already know if you've followed work that fuses design with purpose. Stephen's career has been shaped by a dual passion, working with clients around the globe who believe design and specifically lighting design could truly change the world, and mentoring the next generation of designers through his leadership in SEGD's new professional practices group. He's someone who doesn't just practice lighting design, he elevates it. A recipient of the Edison Report's Lifetime Achievement Award and a fellow of the International Association of Lighting Designers, Stephen brings both depth of experience and a deep sense of responsibility to the future of the field. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Welcome, Stephen.
Well, thank you both. You are two of my heroes, so thank you.
Oh my gosh. And we are just so happy to have you joining us, Stephen. You've also been a wonderful member of my department's lighting design faculty for many years. And so it's nice to be able to talk with you about your expertise in the field. So let's talk about lighting design. It sets mood, it creates awe, it's directional, it's emotional, it can tell the whole story. How did you begin your work with lighting design?
Well, it started a long time ago, back in high school. Like many lighting designers, like many, many of my colleagues who do experiential environments and architecture, we got our start in theater. And I discovered this in high school, and most of my friends and colleagues, some of who are still very dear friends today, most of them grew up and went on to do real jobs, but I couldn't get enough of it. And so I went through my college career studying theatrical lighting design, an undergraduate school. I have an MFA from NYU, the Tisch School of the Arts. And somewhere along the line, I crossed over, I made this discovery of permanent installation, whether that be museum exhibition or environments or architecture. And so while I was pursuing my career as a theatrical lighting designer in a industrials, corporate events, special events kind of lighting, some of which we still do today, I found a new path. And so I'm here today as part of Available Light, but I started out as doing touring theater.
You know what's really interesting, sort of lighting design, sort of in parallel to your story, Stephen, lighting design's always been central to how I approach storytelling. You know, mine started with a background in film and cinema lighting, like theatrical lighting. It's not just functional, it sort of carries emotional weight, it sets the tone, and it guides also the viewer's focus, especially as we start to think about 3D spaces or visitors moving through spaces. So how has lighting design changed over the 30 plus years you've been working in it? And what makes it such a powerful medium for you?
Well, there's an old axiom among lighting designers that lighting designers can make a very cool project even cooler. But lighting designers struggle to make a badly ill-conceived project better. So let me first start by saying we are storyteller enablers. My clients are storytellers. They come up with original ideas. They come up with original ways to present them. I don't necessarily have that big brain skill. I'm not someone who can look at a blank piece of paper and create something magical. What I'm very good at, and what my team at Available Light is really good at, is supporting that, how that story is told, and creating those moments, those crossroads, those tributaries, leading people in places that maybe our clients didn't necessarily think of until we were in the room.
Stephen, give us an example of, you know, a transformational experience where lighting really, really changed things in a significant way, in a really powerful way.
Many years ago, I was involved with a project called the National Infantry Museum. It's in Fort Benning, Georgia. And so you walk into this museum and there was a 100-foot-long ramp from the beginning of the ramp all the way up into the first gallery. And it was a slight uphill incline. And as you walk through this traversing pathway, which is followed a story, each diorama that you came on was a history of the infantry, starting with the Revolutionary War and ending with some Mideast conflict. So there was lighting everywhere, lighting built into the scenery, lighting mounted above and around the scenery. It was all an orchestrated theatrical lighting system. Every fixture had its own control. You know, we often talk about how every light is a paintbrush if you use it properly. And so all of these things kind of came together on the ramp. And it was the synchronization of sound, both voices and effects, and video projection and lighting that created this theatrical event that as you walked through it, it was really an immersive environment. You had no idea where you were until you got to the end of the ramp. So the lighting was orchestrated much like you would see in a Broadway play.
What comes to mind when you talk about the sublime in lighting design?
It really depends on whether the lighting is meant to evoke something far bigger than just making sure you can get from one place to another in an interesting way, or whether it is a very simple lighting task, but you create a sense of experience that transcends just the task that your client is asking you to achieve. Mm-hmm. And that comes from hours and hours of discussion with clients and cajoling them to think about things in ways that maybe they haven't thought about them before. But it is that feeling of completion with lighting. That there's no rough edges. It can be from an incredibly complicated, involved production to just walking through the National Archives in Washington, D.C.
I'd like to build on that idea of the relationship with the client and think about it when in terms of engaging the idea of the absence of light, which can be just as powerful as the presence, especially in narrative spaces. Have you ever had to fight for darkness with a client?
I love where you're headed with this, Abigail, because the whole idea is to reveal things from darkness. Lighting carves things out of darkness. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one of the things that when I talk to my students, especially, is one of the wonderful things that theatrical lighting can do is it can completely divorce you from the space you're in. If you have a black box and there's no light in the corners, and we don't put any light in the corners, your audience doesn't know where the corners are. They don't understand that if you're on the dark ride in Cinderella in Disneyland, you can only see what the design team wants you to see. And everything else just goes away. You don't all of a sudden go, oh, there's the cobweb over there in the corner. The corners are left dark. So you really have no definition of where you are. And if that works, then the design team has you. We've got you.
So I just want to share a brief story that popped in my head when you were talking about the idea of darkness concealing a room. I actually got stuck in the Space Mountain ride, and they had...
Oh, no.
This is a therapy session.
Did you ever get out?
Thankfully, relatively quickly, but not without them having to turn all the lights on.
Oh my God.
And so it was really exactly how you explained, Stephen, completely anticlimactic because you can see the whole roller coaster, everything holding it up. It becomes absolutely unemotional and quite dreadful as you're part of this mechanism. So we actually did Space Mountain in the light, which was compared to Space Mountain we did after that in the dark because we rode it again. Two completely different experiences. But it was just as you were telling me that story, I was like, yes, it's the absence of light and not knowing. Because you also fill things in and
Absolutely.
Elaborate and embellish
Absolutely.
The darkness with your mind, right? So in a way, a visitor is also then participating in that story, which I find really fantastic.
Right. You don't want to see someone's underwear. You just want to see the full dress, right?
You totally do, yeah.
Well, I appreciate how sculptural this is. And do you ever think of yourself as a sculptor? Because you sound like one.
I definitely think of myself as a sculptor of light. And, you know, you can take if you were to take a classic sculpture and just put it in a dark room and spend the next 3 days with a team of designers figuring out the best way to light it, you would probably come up with 200 great ways to light it. For lighting designers, it's all about side light and backlight, which does not allow you to read a graphic. It doesn't allow you to see a face, but you start with the sculpting qualities of light. And then you add the critical front light exactly where you need it and only as much as you need it. It's what grabs your attention. You don't know that it's happening, but it is what's happening.
Well, I guess the next question, that technology is quickly becoming a collaborator in our design process. You know, AI in particular recently is starting to make its, I'll say, presence felt across our creative industries, all the way from concept generation to simulation. How do you see AI enhancing the creative process in lighting design? And can it inspire or even co-design with us?
I personally haven't had that kind of experience yet. However, I certainly see it coming. AI is already in use in the lighting technology world in terms of keeping track of paperwork, keeping track of specifications. So, you know, that's really where the entree, and I think that's probably true in any field, the entree is kind of in the nuts and bolts of the behind the scenes kind of work, not so much the artistic creation. I think what's more important to us, rather than using AI for creative endeavor, is responding to what our clients bring to us, the ones who are actually filling the story and saying, here's this world we've created, whether it's a retail store or a hotel room or a museum exhibit or a dark ride, this is the feeling we're trying to evoke. And maybe they've used AI to create that. And now it's our job to then kind of deconstruct that image. We do that now as in real life. I imagine that someday we'll use AI to say, create a lighting plan around this image, you know, and make it feel like the sun's coming from stage right and setting stage left and something like that.
Do you have a preference? Meaning, like, if a client comes to you with a sort of elaborate AI-generated or, you know, image and mood, and I want it to feel like this, I want it to look like this, and okay, make it happen. Or do you prefer a little bit more of somebody showing up to you with some thumbnail sketches on a cocktail napkin and a passion?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. And you already know my answer. I mean, it's difficult for me to fill in the blanks. It's difficult for me to externalize my own creativity if you've given me the finished image. Whereas if you give me the sketch, my brain starts to whir and my colleagues' brains start to whir, like, oh, well, we could do this or we could do this. If you don't give me all the options in your presentation, it allows me some leeway to add my own stank to it. You know what I'm saying? It's so much more helpful. It gets the conversation going, and it also will engage our clients in ways that, you know, here's the running, go make it happen.
So Stephen, another question that we had still in the AI world here is, if you could speak to, if you know how AI currently is being used to do things like, you know, optimize lighting systems or, you know, related to energy usage or daylight integration, maintenance. Are you familiar with, or are you using AI in any of those particular kinds of applications?
One of the things that we're doing more and more is when we do a particularly complicated or complex project, we are almost always now hooking our control systems up to the internet so that if there's an issue, something goes wrong, or just on a regular maintenance basis, schedule, like you said, the system will send reminders to everyone. And that's incredibly, incredibly helpful to have somebody looking out, somebody in quotes, looking out for the system to make sure it's operating properly. In terms of daylight integration and energy management and daylight harvesting, the control systems that are being developed are amazingly complex. In the old days, you might have had like one sensor in the room, and if somebody walks in, the lights would turn on. But now you have really granular kinds of sensing, where you have lights that are nearer to windows sensing daylight, and you have sensors that are further into the room. And there's this mesh network so that these sensors are all speaking to each other and making the system itself is making decisions about how much electric light should be created for this space. So I think that AI is clearly finding its way into all these things. But your questions or where you're headed with this, Brenda, I think it's just a little bit premature for the lighting industry, but it's all out there. I mean, you know, if you ask me this question in a year, I could probably point to three projects that we've done that had AI in the creation of it.
Stephen, are there specific trends that you're really excited about or things that you're just totally tired of?
I think the trends that I'm excited about is the fact that more and more the design world, whether they're architects or exhibit designers or experience designers, more and more this group of people is embracing lighting, and they're embracing the fact that they don't have the necessary skill set to perform the work. They certainly have the vision. I mean, many of my designers, you know, they're innately lighting designers. They understand how light, you know, carves from darkness, like I said earlier. But in terms of having another voice in the room who can guide that conversation and allow things to actually be realized as opposed to, you know, failure and things don't work where you expect them to, there's a much more appreciation for just the occupation of lighting design. And it's because everyone from owners to designers have come to appreciate what lighting can do and how it can really change a space and how it can be dynamic. I think that's another thing, is dynamic spaces is also has really changed the game for lighting designers. All of us now know what color temperature is. You know, we know that daylight is cooler than incandescent, and that LED can be this entire range. And so if you can have a space that responds to time, so that in the morning a space is one sense of, let's call it white light, but a shade of white light, sort of like beige, right? What color is beige? And then over the arc of the day, you know, the color temperature and maybe even the directionality of the light changes. These make for spaces that, these are energy charged spaces. They help the people who are using the space feel more involved and integrated in with each other, because the space is as alive as they are.
Often when we're concepting, we don't, unfortunately, have a lighting designer involved at our early stages for us. So we'll come up with our lovely little concepts. They're all, let's say, lit the way we like them. They look beautiful for the story they're telling. When do you normally get involved, and how are you prototyping or communicating your lighting to a client at these early stages?
When do we get involved is typically with our clients who really understand what we do is, sometimes it's as early as concept, but more often it is at schematic design. So there's a sense of what you're going to do, and now you start to bring your collaborators in. You're not all grappling in the dark together. So schematic design is a good place for us to join in. And in fact, when we have a budget challenge client who wants to use a lighting designer, but it's difficult for them to find the money, and I try as much as I can to convince our client, I try to turn the table on them and say, you know, it's more important that you have us on when you're still learning this about this place yourself. We can help set you on the road. And then if somebody else, like the electrical engineer or the contractor or you yourselves, have to kind of hustle it through to completion, that may be a better use of our time. Now, it would depend on the kind of project it is, of course, but I would much rather help a client get on the right path and jump off early than come in late and when it's too late. And I also tell my clients, even if you were to bring us on in construction document phase, we still have to do SD. We still have to do DD, right? Whether it's officially with you or not, how do we get to CD without doing those other phases? You know, there has to be ideation. There has to be conception. There has to be some assemblage of ideas and thoughts and hardware.
I want to make sure that we have time and doing a pivot into talking about PPG. So the SEGD has the Museum Exhibition Professional Practice Group, and its mission is to explore new frontiers in museum exhibition design, curation, experiences, enhanced visitor engagement. And this is a group that Stephen is one of the founders of. Thank you so much, Stephen. And the overall intention is to be able to really promote active participation within the exhibits community in a variety of different ways. And the group was formed partly in response to the loss of the museum exhibitions focused group that was run via the American Alliance of Museums. And it was a big loss when that particular group was suddenly dropped. But you and George Mayer swooped in to save the day, and you initiated this forum. So my question for you is why? Why is it important to create this professional venue for the museum community?
So we had a meeting, a gathering place at NAME, the National Association of Museum Exhibition, that was part of AAM. And it just was a way to keep the community together and to keep it moving forward and to inspire and challenge one another about how to make our world better. So I saw the loss of that and I thought that's untenable. And so I got on the phone with George and I said, well, it's now or never. You know, we've been talking about how do we make this better? Well, let's try to do that. So we reached out to SETD and Sibelle, who's a very dear friend and a client for decades. We started to make our pitch and we got about 30 seconds into the pitch and she said, I'm in. And so we started and we then engaged Shraddha Aryal, who's the vice president of exhibits at the Academy Awards Museum, to be our third co-chair. The three of us took this on and that's how we got our start.
Sort of break down the ways that the members can participate. What are they doing within the group?
So we have developed through a bunch of focus groups, we developed six committees. And we didn't really want this to be a top-down organization. And so once we had figured out what these committees would be based on the feedback we got, we immediately found people who would lead those committees and we found people who'd be interested in joining them. And then we tasked each committee with coming up with their own statement of purpose, which we have and we have created. It's on our website. And each of these committees is working very hard to create content programming. We then are going to be reaching out and creating regional coordinators. The SEGD already has a robust regional representation, and there are a lot of regional activities and events that go on. We're going to try to piggyback on that and bring the museum exhibition part of the SEGD into those gatherings. And we, of course, we put on one of the things that NAME was best known for was producing a party at AAM. And as silly as that sounds, it was like the high point of many of the people in our industry. And so we resurrected that party this year and we had 400 people come to our
party. Fantastic. You know, something that's just ever present on my mind, this is a passionate body of people, right?
Yes.
Who do indeed just live and breathe this work. And when we're taking a look at the world today, we're looking at museum, heritage, cultural arts fields being attacked, certainly in the US. And, you know, if ever there was a pressing moment to unify as a community, it's right now. And I'm curious if you could share any kind of topics that are emerging in group discussions that are in response to the state of things? Like, do you see the PPG as being a very action-oriented membership? What's been emerging?
Well, when I've sat in on meetings, that conversation is alive in every committee meeting. It comes up in every meeting. And I think that there is still some fomenting of ideas going on. But I suspect, yes, I suspect as a response to the cutting of funding and the cutting of respect and the redefinition of what is truth, I think all of those things are going to be part of what's happening and will be subject matter in our PPG, both to a greater sense of awareness within our group, but then also how do we share our concerns outward? You know, those having a group and an association to embody some of these ideas in a bigger form. A group of people has a bigger voice than a single person, mostly, not necessarily, not always. I think you will be seeing that more and more because those conversations are coming to fruition in the committees.
Excellent. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am for your work to create this forum and to enable that and foster these kinds of dialogues, particularly now. You know, your timing could not be more important.
Yeah, we certainly didn't mean for it to be happening when this was happening, but here we are. So
here we are. We'll
try to be part of the solution.
So Stephen, today, one of the things that you said, which really struck a chord, which is obviously something you're familiar with, but it was the every light is a paintbrush metaphor. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And I'm going to definitely carry that away with me as I as I look and assess lighting in other people's work, in my own work. It's just absolutely delightful. So thank you, Stephen, for joining us. And thanks to everyone who tuned in. And we hope you'll subscribe to Masters of Experience wherever you get podcasts. Leave a review, share with a friend. Join us next time as we continue to explore what brings spaces to life. So thank you, everyone, and thank you, Stephen.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Matters of Experience is produced by Lorem Ipsum Corp. and recorded at Hanger Studios. Tune in next time for more fun discussions about experience design.